Yeah, back in regular session, our next call is 11:30, so we've got about 45 minutes here to.
Do you want to add?
Go through. Yeah, let's do, skip down to, section five, number eight. A, board may review, discuss, take action on requests regarding the clarification of interpretation of ARS 322248B pertaining to certified veterinary technician application requirements per ARS 411001.02. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead on this. And the question was asked by Adam Parrish.
And Mr. Parrish is here.
Mr. Parrish is here today.
He understands, you just may have questions for him.
Okay. Please state your name for the record.
Adam Parrish.
Thank you. Ms. Frost, take it away.
Okay, so Mr. Parrish, I did review the information that you submitted. And I guess for council, am I able to have Mr. Parrish ask the questions that he has? So what I reviewed, I didn't have any questions about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Yeah, maybe we can begin by asking Mr. Parrish if he has any questions other than those that, you know, were provided initially to you in writing and Victoria, do you have?
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is just the typical way that we have to agendize this type of question. So he doesn't necessarily have direct questions, it's just the format of asking for clarification for someone who's an applicant, who's not an applicant yet.
And perhaps it might be helpful to the process if you have any concerns based upon the paperwork submitted.
Normally the person usually doesn't come. That's why this way it may feel a little bit different. Is he volunteered to come? If you had questions.
Is there an application? That's the thing I didn't see in this information, was an application to?
No.
Okay.
No, that's the whole point, is that.
Got it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. I see an application with it, so I apologize. So I don't see the official transcript. Usually I'm looking at the official transcript, so I don't know. This just was laid out a little different. But from what I'm looking at, if this particular bachelor's was completed, and what I'm seeing of the courses and what the board may consider as being equivalent, in this case, I would typically make a motion to find that this makes meets the requirements of equivalency. But again, I don't see an application. It's not the final, the official transcript. But again, that's what I'm seeing here.
He wants to say something.
So I did contact Penn State. They did send the official transcript to the email that was on the CBT application form. I sent it to Wesley at Arizona Better, whatever the email is.
I'll look for it while he's talking.
They supposedly sent it to you that day. You were supposed to get it. If not, I have a copy of it with me and I can resend it. But I did complete the bachelor's about a month and a half ago now. Just graduated.
Congrats.
Yeah, congratulations. Again, I was in 2021, so I'm like, I don't know if this is in process.
Yeah, so the whole problem was that it was due at noon on the 4th, the whole package and everything, so it would be reviewed today. But Penn State would not send out the verification of completion until the 4th at midnight, so like 12 hours before. So I said, hey, please send it. And I also copied myself. I had myself get one also. So I got mine. So I would assume that you got yours.
Mr. Chairman, Mayor's Board, we do have the official transcript. If it's not on the cloud, it's because I assumed that the one that was up there was sufficient.
Well, and I appreciate it.
I guess if you open that up, does it have a total of 128 hours?
I can look.
it should have a verification of completion on the beginning of it as well.
I'm sure it does. I'm not worried about that.
I'm scared. It's like a recurring nightmare for me that I did not actually finish college, and then I'm like, oh, no.
So, yes, I don't know, Mr. Parrish, if that answers your question, but again, what I'm seeing on the unofficial transcript, if it doesn't match the transcript that was submitted, it would be something that I would make that motion to approve equivalency.
Yes. So if you would make it, will you go ahead and do it?
Well, there's
no application.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that was my hang up on this one. That's why I was a little bit hesitant.
Mr. Chairman, should I explain that again? So remember that the board changed its processes in March of 2020 so that people cannot apply until they have passed the VT&E. You can't take the VT&E until unless you have graduated from an accredited two-year vet tech program, so it's kind of a catch-22. So what you're doing right now is the only way for a person to find out and get permission from a board ahead of time to take the VT&E and move forward. So they're not applicants.
So I can make the motion now.
Please.
What the motion would be, and Mark, if you want to jump in, is basically saying that you do or do not believe that the information that is presented represents the equivalency of an ABMA accredited two-year vet tech program.
Yeah, and just again, keeping in mind where we are, Mr. Parrish has just exercised his right under a state law that was passed several years ago, before filing an application to submit some materials to say, hey, if I would apply, would that qualify? That's what we're here today to discuss. Under that statute, I think what I'm hearing is that should he apply academically, that would not prevent him from getting licensed, that would be acceptable or certified in this case. And after that, so what I would ask is that there's a that we entertain a motion reflecting that, so we can meet our responsibilities under that statute and notify him in writing that his education would meet the minimum requirements for certification, if that is the consensus of the board.
Okay. All right, so I'll make a motion. I would make a motion that the transcript provided by Mr. Parrish would meet our requirements with our statutes for equivalency to an ABMA two-year accredited program to be eligible to make application and set for the VT&E and the state exam.
Thank you.
Second.
A motion of four and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Thank you for coming.
Other than
all in favor?
Much.
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. Now, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
If you're
not.
All right, so where are we going back to? Back to our initial investigative reviews. And we have 2156. In regards to Kathleen Cho's DVM, Tracy Drew's summary, please.
Yes, and this one, I believe, Dr. James
retrieved it, yes.
Do I need to move or
until
no one's here?
Does it matter? Would you mind stretching? Thank you.
We did receive some additional information last night from the complainant, and that letter is on the cloud for your review. So this case is regarding 2156. Complainant is Diane Douglas. The respondent is Kathleen Childs, DVM. On August 26, 2020, Cloud, a 14-plus-year-old male domestic long-haired cat, was presented to respondent due to weight loss and right elbow tumor. Radiographs and blood work were performed. On August 31st, 2020, complainant reported that the cat had developed an abscess at the site of the blood draw. The abscess was treated and resolved. Complainant alleges that respondent did not take responsibility for the incident and felt the cat's condition worsened due to the infection and cancer diagnosis. The cat was humanely euthanized in October of 2020. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue of no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Next we have no respondent, Mr. Stoll Monitoring.
Yes, sir.
And we have the statement from last night, and that is the Word document, right?
That's correct, yes.
No complainants. Dr. James is recused. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead.
Yeah, so can I ask a question of board staff? At the time of this complaint, was Dr. Childs the responsible veterinarian?
Yes, at the time of the complaint, she was.
Okay. Just because whenever I read that add-on letter, she's no longer with that practice, so, okay. So when I originally reviewed this case, I was a little bit horrified by what my client had said, that a team member had told them this happens all the time, and his question was valid, you know, does this happen all the time there, in the field, you know, what? This is not something I'd heard of, you know, an abscess due to a blood collection. I think that what the committee was talking about as far as what was going on with this cat probably was more accurate, but in any case, I agree with the investigative committee. I don't believe there was a violation. And then seeing his letter, it really, he was wanting this against the facility, which again, there has to be a responsible veterinarian, which in this case was this veterinarian. And so he basically was saying he didn't want to pursue it anyways. Again, the bell's already been rung. There's already a case, but I would make a motion to, I agree with the investigative committee. I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
We have a motion on the floor, a second, to dismiss case 2156. Is there any further discussion?
Now, this was a case where the owner wanted a refund for the services, was it not? That was kind of the premise of the case that I've written down. They didn't really feel it was the vet's fault, but I don't think they asked for it.
I think it's just total misinterpretation. It probably had nothing to do with blood draw.
Right.
And nobody admitted that it did have anything to do with the blood draw. They just treated it, took care of it. And the big word that I put in all capitals with an exclamation point was frivolous. This animal's dying. And she was just keeping it alive and calling that palliative care. If you got a broken bone, that's not palliative care. Palliative care is euthanizing, not trying to see how much longer you can make it live and then blaming somebody else because you had to drive back and forth to treat an abscess. That maybe your hygiene techniques with your cat is why it had the abscess, no other reason. So, yeah. You know how I'm going to vote. Any other discussion? Motion on the floor is to dismiss. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
That motion passes. 2156 dismissed. Next up is 2158. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes. Case 2158, the complainant is Cindy Panic Kravitz. The respondent is Heather Molander, DVM. On September 16, 2020, complainant's husband called to get a phenobarbital refill for their dog, Bella Rose, a 6-year-old Dachshund Labrador mix. The prescription refill was denied as the dog was due for an exam. An appointment was scheduled for September 25th, 2020. On September 19th, 2020, complainant reported the dog had two seizures and not responded the following day. Complainant requested a prescription of nothing bar to help get through until the appointment. Respondent declined. Since there were no appointments available sooner than her already scheduled appointment, respondent suggested complainant call around to other premises or take the dog to an emergency facility. Complainant reached out to another man-filled premises that was open. She was able to get a prescription of phenobarbital to hold the dog over until the dog could be seen. The dog was seen by Dr. Browning on September 24th, 2020. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-1, with Dr. Sidaway recused.
No response, no complaint, nobody monitoring. And do we still have Dr. Wright with us, or do I have a change down here? Ms. Frost, you're the lead on this.
Yeah, so this is a very interesting one for me, just because I can definitely see the complainant's issue. I can absolutely understand the respondent's, you know, reservation or hesitation. I think that it was probably an ethical / legal dilemma here. It's unfortunate that the patient went without phenobarbital and had grade 3 seizures when apparently I would assume it was controlled well. And it's interesting that another practice within the same organization essentially did give them the phenobarbital. So I think that there's something to be learned here. Hopefully it was a learning process for the respondent, but I really don't see a violation. So I would agree with the investigative committee and make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Can I just ask a question? I'm not really familiar with phenobarbital other than it prevents seizures, but what was exact, is it used for something else? Is it an abused medication, or they just needed their levels?
Controlled substance.
Okay.
It's a controlled substance that, yes, can be abused.
Okay, so that was really, because I noticed they said that they really needed the dog in to check the levels. So was it was that issue as well to make sure it was properly dosed, or I don't?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think checking the levels checking the levels is also trying to make sure you have an adequate threshold for trouble seizures. I think what happened in this case, what I'm finding a lot now, I don't know why exactly, but people can't get into veterinarians. I don't know if you guys have tried, but to try and establish a new relationship, or even to try and get into one like this where you're an existing client, is really hard. And so I think what's happening, like, this clinic was booked. They couldn't get this person in for an appointment. This was an established client. I think it's extremely unfortunate you couldn't somehow get them in before they ran out of medication. If you're not going to fill it, then fit them in on your schedule, for God's sakes. It would have saved you all of this, and it's the right thing to do. But I can't, that's not a statute violation. That's just a good business practice.
Had kind of regularly been going there. It's not like they hadn't been there in 2 years and suddenly they called out of the blue.
Well, and it's abandoned, so they're probably on a plan.
Right.
But,
you know, sometimes I'm
Again.
We're still looking for a second for the motion.
Yeah, well,
then we should really get into discussion.
Yeah, I'm going to second it, but I'm going to say beforehand, though, I don't think it's fair to blame the veterinarian alone. I mean, we have to put some responsibility on the client to say, hey, you knew on the last prescription this says testing has to be done for refill. If you called when you have no pills or 2 pills left and it's going to take some time to get something done, that's not the veterinarian's fault. I don't see any problems here, unfortunately. This is the client has to manage their own time, their own schedule, and their own health, their pet. It's not my responsibility to manage that for my client. So I understand it's a frustrating situation, but this is all on the client for not calling early enough to schedule this and arrange this. This is a lack of preparation on your part, is not an emergency on my part. Now, I don't blame this vet at all. I require testing also. Now, there will be exceptions from time to time, and I will allow for here's an extra pill, but to file a complaint to do this, this is ridiculous when this is the client's responsibility, not the vet.
Well, and I think there is a misconception in the complaint, and this is where the confusion is, again, on the client's part, is that they assumed because they had two refills on their label remaining that they could get those. The issue is with DEA, you can get the refills until the year expires, and then they, DEA requires a new prescription. And so whenever the people assumed that they were, when the owner assumed they were going to be able to get it, showed up to the pharmacy and were told, no, you can't have it, that's where the issue came in. So they hadn't even reached out to the veterinarian, and there was no intent to for the next couple refills that they assumed they had. And so again, I don't know that that falls to the veterinarian to educate on that, because I think a lot of practices, clients will say, oh, well, I have refills left on my label. Well, that's not exactly how this works, right? The there may be refills, but there's an expiration, right, on when those refills can be utilized. Definitely a hard and fast rule when it comes to DEA, but again, veterinarians have the right to say, you know, it's been a really long time, you know, we need to reevaluate your pet.
Yeah, but again, I don't think that us saying that, like, the veterinarian needs to make exceptions these kinds of things, I think that's just beyond our scope and our ability to even say those kinds of things, because this is not the veterinarian's responsibility. Like this, so I mean, I'm glad that voting to be dismissed at this point, but like this, for us to chastise the vet, I think that's overstepping our bounds, because that's not in our purview.
So I was just going to point out, how many times has somebody been penalized when they came before us because they did not follow the law? This person is specifically following the law. And that's, I like to do things all in caps, underlined, whatever. And in this one, it's the law, exclamation point. Can't ask somebody to put their license at risk, and we tell them, oh, I'm sorry you're here, but you had the responsibility to protect your license. So she protected her license exactly how we generally tell veterinarians they should protect their license.
Right.
This client's upset, so what?
Well, and I'm just wondering, again, I'm not familiar with seizures in pets. I mean, apparently it's not, in this particular case, this wasn't a life or death. If the dog didn't have it, it would.
I think anytime you have a seizure, it could be life and death.
Okay.
But again, that's on the owner. And they could have taken it directly to an emergency room and gotten it taken care of. They chose not to do that. So, you know, if it's hard to get in, if you don't realize that, oh, I'm giving my animal a controlled substance, that this is a little bit different than just giving it a probiotic. I mean, if you're gonna be a responsible owner, you have to know that, and you have to take care of it. And they've been going twice a year, and then they stopped. Now, maybe that was COVID, maybe it was something else, but they got a call, they knew it had been a year, and they knew they had to get in there, and they didn't do it. They waited too long.
Well, when they got the call saying they had to get in, it was almost 10 days before the next appointment was available. So that's what I was saying, is we are just seeing very long delays in when appointments are available. Well, I'm not saying it's the clinic's responsibility to make sure they have an appointment available. I'm just saying if it had been a client of mine that had been coming to me for a long time, I either would have filled it for a week to get them through, or I would have had him come in and done at least a technician blood draw and an appointment to get him a refill. But that's your own personal opinion. You don't have to do it. There's nothing that says she had to do that, and she has every right to say no.
So, but then they could have turned you in and filed a complaint because you wrote a prescription without seeing their animal.
Yes.
And then if it's a controlled substance, then we got to turn them in.
And if that case came before us, I'd be like, that was a very reasonable thing to do in the practice of medicine. I mean, my own doctor does that for me, so like, I don't think that would be something. I'm not on any controlled drugs, though. But I don't think that would be something that would be that far off. But I think we're just arguing to talk about a point when really we all are in agreement that there's no violation.
Yes. Just thought it was an interesting one, not being
that
it was curious.
It's a nuisance. Okay, motion on the floor. We do have a second by Dr. Wright, is to dismiss 2158. Is there any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2158 is dismissed. Next up. Let's hurry through these because Mr. Stoll wants to go to lunch.
That's okay. Thank you.
2159. Tracy, would you read us the summary?
Yes. Case 2159. The complainant is Robert Lewis. The respondent is Jacob Graffenried, DPM. On September 17, 2020, Osprey 5-year-old male Jamal was presented to the respondent for a dental procedure. The dog was anesthetized, the teeth were cleaned, and several teeth were extracted. Later that day, the dog was discharged to complainant by technical staff. Complainant was upset that the dog's teeth were extracted without consulting him first. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Act Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
We have no respondent, Mr. Stoll monitoring.
Yes, sir.
And no complainant. And Ms. Krieger, you're the lead.
Yes. So as we all know, we see these cases pop up pretty regularly. And in this case, of course, we have the owner sign the consent form. But of course, and I just did a dental for my dog, Bindi, a few weeks ago, and it was, just a routine dental. And of course, she came out with two less teeth. So this happens frequently. I only wish that vets would put a little more emphasis, even though it's not required, on the fact that there is a likelihood, especially if you have a smaller breed dog, that you might come out with less teeth, just so people have that idea going into it. This owner states that if they had been contacted, they wouldn't have agreed to it. Is that really true? I mean, we're not doing root canals in dogs, and it's just not the same as human dental care. So when you have an issue, the best thing to do is to remove the teeth. Dogs can eat their food, just a couple teeth from what I understand. So really, I understand the frustration from this owner. And like I said, I wish vets would, just kind of add that caveat before people go in for a routine cleaning, but it's not a requirement. Nothing fell below the standard of care. So I would make a motion to dismiss this case with no violation.
Second.
The motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case number 2159. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. The case is dismissed. Next up is 2163. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes, case 2163. The complainant is Michelle McVee. The respondent is Catherine Goldberg, PDMS. On October 1st, 2020, Callie, a 6-month-old female pit bull mix, was presented to the respondent for a spaying procedure. The dog was anesthetized and prepped for surgery. Once in the surgery suite and surgery was started, the dog began to move and swallow. Therefore, the isoflurane was increased and more propofol was administered. The dog's oxygen level decreased and respiratory rate slowed. The anesthesia was turned off, the anesthetic machine was evaluated, and it was discovered that the tubing connecting the oxygen flow meter to the rebreathing circuit and scavenging system were not connected. The tubing was connected and manual respirations were started. The dog did not resume breathing on her own. Resuscitation medications were administered and CPR was performed without success. The dog passed away. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-1 with Mr. Almaraz opposed.
Okay, on this one we have no respondent, Mr. Stoll monitoring.
Yes, sir.
And no complainant. And Dr. James is the lead.
So this was a
really a tough case for me because I think we all know, including the veterinarian at hand, what happened here. And while it was clearly an honest mistake and something that they actually had practices in place to prevent, we didn't do our due diligence as a hospital to ensure technicians actually did their job, and this is why we're here. So I get that it's an honest mistake. I listened to the audio from the investigative committee because I was trying to get more thoughts around why, in this case, just because the person is honest and says there was a mistake made at the practice, that they're not any more responsible than somebody who tried to lie about it. That person's not ethical either, but the responsibility doesn't really change. And I feel like not having any accountability on this veterinarian for a dog that passed away due to failure of us to follow our own process, that's a concern to me. I can't see how we would feel that would be fair to all the other veterinarians that we have held accountable to ensuring that practices that we put in place in the clinic are enforced, and that machines and equipment and things like that are all checked. Like, I mean, there's things that happen all the time that are mistakes. It doesn't mean anything about you being a bad veterinarian. It's just this is part of being a veterinarian. Do I want to see somebody who really is, from what I can tell, operating a good practice, has great checklists in place, has, you know, staff, has processes to prevent these things? Do I want to see them, you know, have to go through, you know, a ton of re-education when really they already know that? Probably not. So I kind of be open to what others think about it, but I'm kind of leaning towards, at a minimum, a letter of concern in this case of 2163.
So I'm going to weigh in and say I think it would be more than that. We've had the exact same case. Changed the name of the complaint, changed the breed of the dog, changed the sex of the dog. The months are exactly the same, a six-month-old pup. Change a spay to a neuter. I mean, that's the only difference. Change a valve being shut to a hose not being connected. In exact both cases, the animal was suffocated. And in the other one, they didn't just get a letter of concern. They got some CEs, they got a penalty, they got a black mark on their record, and it was actually an older gentleman who was, I wouldn't call it volunteering, he's getting paid for his work, but he's trying to do, you know, community service for low-cost spay and neuter service. He never had anything in his entire career, and he does now. So I don't think this skates just because, and the exact same circumstances too. They found out immediately. He told the owners, this was our mistake. They apologized for it. They did everything these guys did in this clinic. So it's the exact same circumstances, and I think we gotta be consistent in how we do it. Yes, it's sad that this seemingly very good person, good veterinarian, that this happened, but I think it raises above a lot. It is gross negligence. It's a definition of negligence. You didn't pay attention to what was going on.
And this is Dr. Wright, and I unfortunately agree. I mean, I applaud the veterinarian for admitting the thing was going on, taking responsibility. And in most cases, I think when accidents happen, that kind of is the end of it. But when the client elects to elevate it to our level, we can't, so we can take that into account, but we have to apply the law if the law kind of isn't. And yes, it was a tragic accident or an accident, but it was an accident of negligence. And when it comes to our level, we can empathize, we can empathize, but I think we do have to apply the law the same way each time. And the pet died through negligence. As bad as it is, as horrible as it is, the law has to be dispassionate and emotional, and I agree with Mr. Loki. I wish I could be consistent. We can do that as hard as it is for our job. This is why it's not a very tough job. A lot of times it's hard, it sucks, but we have to apply that law equally.
I think one thing, and I don't remember that case, I don't remember the case after you said it, but I don't remember specifically, I know he was filling in, and in this case, the reason why I'm looking at this slightly different maybe than some others is this clinic had a lot of practices already in place to prevent this from happening. And some practices that, in cases that we've looked at, there's nothing there. There's no checklist that you're supposed to do in the morning. There's no process for ensuring anesthesia machines are in good working condition. There's no checks on them. And then after a complaint or something like this happens, they put it into place. This one already had it in place. It just wasn't done. So it was a little bit different for me, only from the standpoint of, is she gonna, by doing CE, she already knew that that should be in place. She already put it in place. That's where I was struggling with it a little bit, but I agree with you guys wholeheartedly. Somebody's accountable to this.
And I'm not saying hammer somebody with hours and hours or anything else, but it has to go on the record where a letter of concern will not put it on the record.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add, having great written procedures that are very thorough are unfortunately useless if they're not followed.
Well, in this case, it actually looks like the checklist was checked off. Like if you go through the checklist, the check the hose and tubes on the anesthesia machine was checked. So my assumption on this is the technician followed the protocol. The protocol was in place. The technician penciled it and didn't do it, or didn't detect that there was a hose that wasn't in place when they should have. That's a training issue. But this veterinarian, that was actually checked off. So is that really this veterinarian, or is that become the responsible veterinarian to make sure the staff is trained adequately? Because if she just looked at the checklist, if she's interpreting it the way I interpreted it, it would have looked like it had been done.
Look, they also had another monitor on the animal that was showing oxygen was decreasing. And for whatever reason, they didn't believe it. They readjusted it and read it again.
Pulse oxes do that a lot. You readjust and you get a better reading. So I can see where she's going with that. I think they did detect that there was a problem. I mean, that's another thing that we've seen happen where dogs die on the table and they didn't even detect there was a problem. This clinic did detect there was a problem. They took action on it. It just
right after they increased the gas.
Yeah.
A little more. And a little more of the
sedation.
Propofol, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that didn't help. But yeah, I mean, I can empathize. Certainly, praise them for. I'm not even gonna say praise them. You don't praise somebody for doing the right thing. They did the right thing. I'll recognize they did the right thing. And appreciate that they did the right thing. But, you have to pay for your mistakes, and it's something we've been ignored. So the chair would entertain a motion to do something.
We can do a motion because the definition that it does fit is gross negligence. So I think it would be 32, number 11 for gross negligence for failure to ensure the anesthetic equipment was in good working condition and corrected and connected correctly prior to surgery.
And does that need a rule to go with it?
No.
So what I'm hearing though is that possible motion would be to disagree with the recommendations of the investigative committee, cite that particular statute as a possible violation, and invite the licensee in for informal interview.
Well, we need to do an interview, just do a CA or offer it.
Well, yes, we can do that as well.
You also have the option of a decree of censure.
Which is your comments about not needing additional continuing education, and that's in your arsenal as well.
I mean, I don't feel like we should call the veterinarian in for the informal only because so I don't want to waste another day of her time.
And you can make it, you know, if not accepted, invited in. So it doesn't have to come back before we get.
If not accepted, then yeah. We go to informal?
Then invite informal.
Yeah, so it would be making a motion to disagree with the investigative committee and find a violation of gross negligence, which is 32.22.32 number 11, failure to adequately check the anesthetic equipment prior to surgery and offer it as a consent agreement. If not accepted, then we move to an informal.
Right, you just have to articulate what the discipline would be, whether it's a degree of censure or education or anything else that you think is appropriate.
We haven't done many degrees of censure, have we? No.
Basically, you know, it's just a public reprimand. It's a disciplinary action. It's on their record, but there's no period of probation or anything like that. There's nothing to comply with.
I think I would probably do that.
Do we need to add that it resulted in the death of the pet?
That's already it has that it resulted in the
I think if you should be the definition.
It's already in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on page 30. Another one.
I don't see it in there in number 11.
That's on page three, number 10, the definition of negligence.
It states means treatment of the patient or practices of veterinary medicine resulting in injury, unnecessary suffering, or death.
Death. I saw it somewhere. It's just there.
All right, so our motion is. We found that violation.
Yeah.
Consent agreement, if not going to an informal, the penalty is the
offering of
for degree of censure or
And we can state that, you know, the practice has already taken ownership of re-educating the team on the practices, if that helps with why we're choosing to go that route.
It probably would, and we can add that to the findings of that in the consent agreement.
So no penalty, no CE,
correct.
No monetary penalty.
Correct.
It's on the record, it's reprimand.
Okay.
So we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Any further discussion? How many days do they have before they have to?
30 days.
How many days?
To sign?
Yeah, to sign. 30 days to sign or it goes to informal. Okay. Let's do a roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Traeger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Loki?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Wright? Dr. Wright? Must have been Dr. Gay.
Lost Dr. Wright on that one. All right, so the board has voted to find a violation and issue a consent agreement. And that one, that concludes our investigative reviews, and we are at 11:30, time for our informal. Case number 2168. Let's get set up.